Al will be forever the myth.
You're the king of kings, Al.
There's always a pecking order. The little peckers never mess with the big peckers. So I'm a rooster, and he's a chicken.
All right, welcome to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, where we talk to the legends of bodybuilding, and we also talk about the history of bodybuilding. I'm your host, John Hansen. And on today's episode, we are going to continue our discussion with Jerry Branum, where we are reviewing the year 1991. If you're new to the podcast, what we typically do at the end of each year is we go back in time 30 years, 40 years, and 50 years, and discuss the events in bodybuilding on that particular year. So at the end of 2021, we started off with the year 1971, and then we went into 1981, and now Jerry and I are talking about the year 1991. So Jerry, if you don't know, is one of our frequent guests on the podcast, and he is a former writer for Muscle and Fitness magazine and also Iron Man magazine, and he had a chance to experience a lot of these competitions in person and talk to a lot of these bodybuilders. So today, Jerry and I are going to talk about the 1991 NPC USA contest, which was won by Mike Matarazzo. And this was a really big amateur contest that featured Flex Wheeler and also Chris Cormier. And then after that, we're going to talk about the NPC Nationals, which was one of the most famous nationals, NPC Nationals ever in the history. It was won by Kevin Lavroni, and it was also had Flex Wheeler in it as well. Paul DeMeo, Ronnie Coleman, way before he became Mr. Olympia, Matt Mendenhall, and one of the most, as I said, famous NPC Nationals ever. So we're going to talk about that contest. We're going to talk about the IFBB North America contest, which was another amateur event. And then finally, we'll finish off our discussion talking about the Mr. Olympia contest, which was Lee Haney's last Mr. Olympia win. It was his eighth win in a row, and Lee wisely retired at the young age of, I think he was 32 or 33 years old. So Lee was one of the only guys to really do it right, win the competitions and then get out while he was still young and healthy. At the end of our podcast, to kind of celebrate Lee's victory at that 1991 Mr. Olympia, I'm going to read an article from Muscle Training Illustrated, which was Dan Laurie's magazine. And this goes all the way back to May 1983. And it was an interview with Lee right after he won the IFBB Mr. Universe contest in 1982. And Doris Berrio is the one who interviews him. And I thought this was a really interesting interview because Lee is being interviewed at the beginning of his professional career. This is right after he won the Mr. Universe, before he competed as a pro. And one of the things that's really interesting is Lee talks a lot about his view of steroids and his choice to take steroids at a young age when he started competing in the bigger competitions. So it was a very revealing article. One, I don't think Lee ever opened up like that again. So I have this issue and I read it and I was like, wow, this is really, really interesting. So I thought I would share that with you guys. And we'll get to that article right after we get to our interview with Jerry Branum. All right, what else is going on? I got an email from one of our Patreon sponsors, Andrew Hefferman. And Andrew is a big-time supporter of the show. And he wrote a really interesting article about Joseph Biena, who is Arnold's son. And this is the son, of course, that Arnold had with the Maid. And it was also the event that kind of derailed Arnold's political career. Well, actually, he was retiring as governor when it happened. But Joseph is now in his 20s, and he had a big article done on him for Men's Health that Andrew wrote. So it was really, really interesting. I'll probably read that article next week on the show because it's really interesting how Joseph is coming along. He's into real estate. He's a real estate agent for a company out in California, and he's also taking up acting. And he seems like he's just got a really great attitude, really developing a nice physique. He's Arnold's height. He's 6'1". But he's only 190 pounds. I don't think he has any plans to compete, but he does want to get into movies, which I think is one of the reasons why he's working out and looking good. But he just loves training. And he seems like he's got a really great attitude, just like Arnold. So I'll probably read that article next week. It was really interesting. All right. What else is going on, guys? Well, I hurt my back this week. went really heavy last week, squatting and doing T-bar rows, and my back was okay. But then I stretched it on the inversion table when it was really tight, and somehow my back went out. So I am in pain this week. I'm not training, of course, this week at all. Just trying to heal my back. It's very strained. It's kind of like when your back goes out, that's exactly what happened. That hasn't happened to me in a while, but it was just weird because my back was so tight. And then I just went on that damn table at the wrong time. Usually I love that inversion table, but this was not the right time to do it. I went on a walk Sunday morning and my back was kind of tight. So then I went on that. So probably should have did it reversed. I probably should have did the inversion table first or did my yoga first or something. But anyways, my back was super tight before I did it. So that did not work out. Let's see. We did get one email last week from Australia. So if you guys want to email me about the show, you can do that at naturalolympia@gmail.com. It says, hey, John, greetings from Perth, Western Australia. I just want to say a big thank you for all the Bodybuilding Legends shows and podcasts. I've been watching your shows for several years, and I'm a huge fan. It's so great to have these interviews with all the legends I've admired since I first started training 14 years ago. I especially love the shows you do with Jerry Branum, where you look back 30 years, 40 years, and 50 years. My favorite was the one on the 1980 Mr. Olympia. I also really enjoyed the Danny Padilla interviews. He was my idol when I first got into the sport. Keep up the awesome work, John. It's much appreciated. Paul Sita from Australia. All right. Thank you, Paul. Appreciate that email. If you guys want to email in, as I said, just go to naturalolympia@gmail.com and you can email me about anything you want to talk about with the show. I also put up an interview, an old interview. This was with John Little. And I think we did this last June, right around the anniversary of Mike Mentzer's death. In fact, it was the 20th anniversary of Mike's death because Mike died in 2001. So this was, I think, we did the interview in June of 2001. So anyways, we put the podcast up, of course, last year, but I have the video interview that I never put up. So I finally put that up on YouTube. This was part one of our interview with John Little. So we'll have part two coming up as well. It just took a lot of editing. I put a ton of old pictures in there from some of these old muscle builder magazines that I have, because we talked about Mike's competitive career, including his Mr. America win in 1976 at the IFBB Mr. America. We also talked about his contest in 1975, where he competed against Robbie and the Mr. America. And then he also competed against Robbie at the 1976 Mr. Universe in Montreal. And then we talked about his Mr. Universe contest in 1977 in Nîmes, France, where he lost to Cale Scalac. And then finally, his Mr. Universe win in 1978 in Acapulco. So lots of great pictures on that video. So check out my YouTube channel under my name, John Hansen, and you guys can check that out. It's getting a lot of views already. I just put it up yesterday. So I'm glad it's getting views because it took a lot of work to get all those pictures in there, but it turned out really, really good. So I'm going to try and catch up on all those videos. I got about, man, I'm probably about a dozen behind from last year. So I'll try to catch up as much as I can. All right. I think that's all we got. So without any further ado, here's our interview with Mr. Jerry Branum, one of my favorite guests. We're going to review the year 1991. This is part two of our interview. And as I said, we're going to talk about the 1991 NPC USA, the 1991 NPC Nationals, and of course, the IFBB Mr. Olympia in 1991, where Lee Haney won his eighth and last Mr. Olympia title. Here we go.
I want to mention a couple amateur shows that year, Jerry, because we had a lot of great amateurs were competing in the early 90s. And, yeah, you know, back then it was hard to get a pro card.
Right.
Because, like, at the USA Championships, which I want to talk about right now, you had to win the whole thing, not just your class. You had to win the whole overall in order, yeah, to get your pro card. So there was a lot of good bodybuilders that didn't turn pro. And Mike Matarazzo was a winner that year. Mike came out of nowhere. He came out of the East Coast in Boston. Yeah. And he trained at Gold's Gym for the whole summer. And I remember he was really huge and bulked up when he got there. And by the by July, when the USA was held, he won the whole thing. He got really shredded and ripped and put it all on the line. And he was the new big rising star in bodybuilding.
I think I was at that contest.
It was in L.A., right? Wasn't in L.A.? Probably.
I became good friends with Mike. He was from, like you said, the Boston area. I was from New York.
Yeah.
We're like two Eastern guys, and we used to talk all the time. He was a very nice guy. Hey, I remember him telling me that he used to be a what they call a bone breaker.
Yeah. He was a bad dude.
Yeah, he was an ex-boxer, you know.
Yeah.
He was a tough guy. He used to collect on debts and loans, you know, and this stuff.
Yeah.
He had that face that he could be scary looking when he wanted.
Right.
I would just picture, I remember saying to him, Mike, I said, I tell you, if you showed up at my door to collect a lot of money, I'd give you my ATM card and take it over. He laughed, you know.
Right.
You know, so
yeah, I guess it was pretty intense that summer training at Gold's Gym because you had Flex Wheeler who was in second place,
right?
And I think Chris Cormier was in fourth place,
right?
So Chris and Flex Wheeler were training partners,
yeah.
And they would be they'd be yelling at each other, you know, across the gym floor, Matarazzo and Flex and Chris.
Well, you know, it's funny that because I just remembered. At that show, I remember interviewing Flex also, and he said to me almost the same thing that that Vince Taylor had told me. I said to him, you got a great symmetrical physique with great shape. I think you do very well if you turn pro, because you know he didn't get the pro card because he didn't win. You know,
right?
He says to me, I don't think I'm good enough to be a pro.
Yeah.
And you know, you got to laugh when you look at how things turned out just a couple of years later.
Yeah.
This guy was a not good enough to be a pro. I personally consider him one of the definitely uncrowned Mr. Olympias.
Me too. Yeah.
A handful of guys I call uncrowned Mr. Olympias because they definitely had all the goods to win. Flex,
right.
Kevin Livrone, Sean Ray, and there's one or two others that I can't think of at the time, but these guys to me could have easily won Mr. Olympia.
Yeah.
Nasser El Sabadi, I think it was 97.
97,
I was there. I had him winning over Dorian for a number of reasons. Dorian had a lot of injuries. You know, he had the bicep.
Bicep,
you know, and I was right next to these guys. I saw them. And I'm telling you, that year, people will, you know, they tried to tell me that Dorian again won because he had a better back. I mean, Nasser's arms were much bigger than Sean's. I mean, Dorian's. But people say that Dorian won because of his better back. Nonsense, I'm telling you. Dorian had a slightly bigger back, but it wasn't much. It was kind of – I almost compare that contest to when Heath went against Kai Greene. Do you remember how close it was?
Yeah.
Their backs were even.
Yeah.
You can't say one had a better back. They were even going right through the show.
Yeah.
It was almost like that, except – that I'd say Nasser being in absolute the best shape he was ever in, I would have given it to him. But that's another story. But, you know, just.
Yeah. I don't think Flex was that big as he got the next year. Because the next year he won it. But he still had amazing shape. And he was a heavyweight. Yeah. And he was shredded. And I remember Sean Ray was doing the play-by-play for ESPN. And I thought – and Sean Ray was saying that he thought Flex should have won. I think he knew Flex, so they had a friendship at the time.
Yeah, that's true.
But he was saying because Sean Ray thought the more symmetrical, aesthetic physique should win, where Mike Matarazzo was just kind of like big legs, big arms. He had the short legs, remember? Short legs, longer torso. So he wasn't as symmetrical, but he just out-muscled everybody. And Matarazzo was really in shape that year, though, too. He was very ripped.
I think that the reason Mike won that year was he was in peak condition.
Yeah.
The best he could possibly be for his body.
Yeah.
And it's true. Flex had better muscle shape, better overall look, but he wasn't maximized. He did the next year.
Yeah.
Different. That's the reason Mike won. And Mike did have those phenomenal, gigantic calves also. I remember Mike might also telling me the same thing Chris Dickinson told me years before, that when he was a child, when he wears shorts, the other kids would make fun of him. They called him Popeye because he had these gigantic – even as a kid, he had big calves.
Yeah.
Totally genetic, you know.
So, yeah. That was an exciting year because this guy came out of nowhere, out of Boston, and he was a new rising star, and everybody thought this guy was going to be – you know, that's exciting when that happens. That happens once in a while where somebody will come out of nowhere.
Like
Nick Walker – we were referring to, he kind of reminds me of that, of Matarazzo, how he came out of nowhere too.
I had never heard of the guy when he showed up.
Yeah.
Nick Walker.
Big kid. Cormier got fourth place, so he did pretty good.
Yeah. Well, that's another guy that could have won Mr. Olympia. Chris, yeah. I mean, Chris had all the goods to do it too. I mean, he had everything. He could have won.
Yeah.
If any of those guys, Coleman or Lee Haney, Dorian, if they had come in a little bit off, you know, Chris could have won. Absolutely never happened. You know, but Chris had everything to win. He had all the tools.
Let me see who won the North America that year. Because I remember back then in the 90s, the only way you could get a pro card back then was you had to win your class at the Nationals or you had to win the overall at the USA or the North America. Now, the North America at the time, that was America, Mexico, and Canada.
I think Paul Dillette might have won that year, the North America.
No, it was Ray McNeil. Paul was second.
Oh, Paul was second. Okay.
Yeah. Paul must have won the next year, 92.
Yeah, he had to win it the next year because I know he won the North America. Oh, poor McNeil. You know what happened to him, right?
Yeah, poor Ray McNeil got shot by his wife.
Oh, man. She took
thought he was cheating on him and shot him with a shotgun to the face. Oh, yeah.
It said that it kind of blew his head off, man.
What a way to go.
I met him a couple of times. He seemed like a really nice guy. And I remember when he competed, I think it was an Ironman show in the early 90s, Sally McNeil, his wife,
yeah,
was there with like three of the kids, and they were just going crazy, rooting for him, jumping up. They were like in the row before me. They were, they were going crazy, rooting for him and stuff like that. I mean, it's amazing how things turned out that, you know, she wound up killing
them. Weren't they a military family, Jerry?
Yes, they were. Yeah. They were both in the military.
Both in the military, right.
Yep. Yeah, it's a shame. I only met him a couple of times. I remember sitting at an Olympic contest with him and Paul Dillette, you know, and he seemed like a nice guy to me, you know. But, you know, you never know what goes behind the scenes. I don't know.
Yeah. So I remember seeing the video of the 93 Olympia. He was in that.
Yeah.
And I remember he had real thick traps. His traps were super thick from the back.
Right.
He had, like, really some really good body parts and some missing body parts. So he wasn't really complete.
Right, that's true.
He was good enough to at least get his pro card, you know?
Right, that's right. Yeah, it's a shame what happened to him, yeah.
Yeah. I wonder how Paul Dillette looked in that show. I don't remember.
I don't either, to be honest with you. I know what – I was there. I think I don't know whether I saw him win the North America. I don't remember, but I remember seeing him around the time, and he was pretty big.
Yeah.
He's already huge, that guy. I mean, another guy, geez. He's probably one of the biggest bodybuilders I've ever seen.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
I mean, if he had a little bit more detail in his back, he would have been unbeatable.
Unbeatable, for sure.
Nobody could have been. If he had just – well, he needed two things. He needed a better back, not width. He had the width.
Yeah.
But he needed more detail, and he needed to learn how to pose. And I tried to help him with that because when he do the back pose, he kind of – you know. He kind of emphasizes, he'd kind of crunch, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So his back looked narrow when he, he looked like a, you know, I told him you have to bring out the lats, you know, show the width.
Yeah.
But because he probably knew he didn't have the detail of the back, so I guess his way of hiding it was to scrunch his back together, thinking that, you know what I'm saying? It would give the illusion of having more detail.
It seemed like he had no mind-muscle connection with his back at all. Like
He couldn't flex it right. He just, the posing really hurt him. Because, like I said, other than the back detail, he had everything. Gigantic calves. I mean, there's a photo of him posing next to Yates at one of the Olympics. His calves were just as big or bigger than Yates. And Yates had immense calves.
Yeah, and he just dwarfed them everywhere else.
I remember asking Paul, I said, Paul, your calves are definitely genetic, right? He says, no, they were not big when I started. I was a skinny guy.
Hmm.
He says, hey, let me show you. And he takes out a picture of himself. When he first started, and sure enough, he's skinny. He's wearing shorts. He's skinny as a rail until it comes down to the knees.
That's amazing.
And then suddenly you have these big, bulgy calves. I said, Paul, all that skinny calves? Come on, man. You have only calves in this picture.
Yeah. Didn't it seem like Paul Dillette was one of those guys who really responded to drugs? When he started taking the drugs, he just blew up.
Oh, my God. He sure did. Yeah. But Paul's problem, I think I might have mentioned this, his problem was he'd ask dozens of people for advice. And some of the advice would conflict and wind up hurting. Like that time at the Arnold show where they had to cart him off.
Where he cramped up. Yeah.
went into rigor mortis while he was posing. You know, that was a diuretic problem. He had to go to the emergency room. Luckily, he survived and all that. But
yeah,
you know, but this guy also, along with Sergio Leiva, you know, maybe Ronnie Coleman, easily one of the most genetically gifted bodybuilders ever.
Definitely.
Just a freak. I mean, just oh my God! I remember he had those looked like almost varicose veins.
Yeah.
One time he was so cut, he had veins going through his abs. I mean, women would look at him and they'd turn away because the veins they couldn't handle the look of those veins all over.
Right, right.
So it was like too much for them, you know? He was a funny guy. There was a lot of fun to hang around with Paul, you know?
And he's healthy today, 30 years later. He's healthy.
Yeah, he went up to Canada. He started a bodybuilding federation. He slimmed down. I mean, he's now, he's not big anymore. He looks pretty healthy, though. He's slim.
Yeah. And,
from what people tell me, he's doing great. I mean,
I think the organization's doing really well. Yeah.
He married some woman up there and had a little daughter and stuff like that. And he's very happy. I'm happy for the guy.
Yeah, me too.
You know, I'm happy for the guy. I mean, hopefully he keeps his health. He's not taking any drugs or anything.
I don't think he is. No.
You know, he might actually live to a nice age, you know?
Yeah.
I'm hoping he does. I like Paul. He's a nice guy.
John Simmons won the light heavyweight class. Remember John Simmons?
No, I don't remember this.
Black bodybuilder. I think he was from Detroit, maybe.
I just vaguely remember him. Just vaguely.
Yeah. Well, it's funny. I see him at the shows now because he's the coach of Andrea Shaw, who is the current Miss Olympia. Miss Olympia,
right?
Women's bodybuilding. Yeah. So she's won it now 2 years in a row.
Yeah.
And John is her coach. And whenever I see him at the shows, I'm like, oh, yeah, I remember John Simmons. He's like, oh, he was like surprised I knew who he was. I'm like, well, I go way back. And he goes, where did you compete at? And I go, well, I didn't compete against you guys, but I remember, you know, reading the magazines and following you guys, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, let's talk about the other NPC show of the year, which was a really big one. This is one of the most famous NPC nationals ever, Jerry.
Oh, man. Are you talking about the national?
Yeah.
I'm going to tell you right off the bat, that heavyweight division had the greatest lineup of bodybuilders.
Right.
In NPC and bodybuilding history. Just read off those names. Let people hear the names of the guys over there competing.
Well, Kevin Lebroni was the winner.
Yeah.
Flex Wheeler was second again. He got second in the USA, was second here. Paul DeMeo was in third place. Ronnie Coleman, future Mr. Olympia, was in fourth. Matt Mendenhall was in fifth. Bob Chicarillo was in sixth. Chris Cormier was seventh. Edgar Fletcher was eighth. And Dean Caputo was ninth.
Yeah, that was some lineup, boy.
Wow.
Future great champions in there. You know.
So Lavroni that year had lost to Paul DeMeo at the Junior Nationals.
Right.
And Lavroni came out of nowhere, out of Baltimore. Okay. No one had heard of this guy at all. He was another, like Matarazzo, just a complete shock, a rising star. And they went down to the wire, and DeMeo beat him by one vote. It was that close.
You
so
know,
a couple months later, Lavroni turned the tables and came in looking much better. He had a better tan. He was more cut. And, man, this guy had a pro-level physique to win the Nationals, you know.
Was that show in Pittsburgh?
Yes, yeah.
Okay. I remember that show. But I'll tell you a funny story about that. But I met Lavroni, right? Well, I met him at that contest. But not long after that, Weider asked me to interview. And I met him at what was then called the Pacifico Hotel in Venice.
Yeah.
I went up to his room, and he had the TV on, right? I was supposed to interview him on his arm training, I think, or something like that. And unfortunately, what was on the TV was the Junior America contest that he competed in.
Oh, really? Wow.
And he was totally focused on the TV.
Yeah.
He wouldn't turn off the TV when I was interviewing him. So every question and answer, he'd go, yeah, no, yeah, no.
God, another bad interview.
No detailed, nothing, you know. And,
yeah.
and I walked away, and I'm thinking, how do I write this guy? I have nothing, you know. But I did manage to get his exercises before I left. So I had to make a whole article, you know, of his routine because he didn't tell me anything. I had to talk like I was him.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I didn't lie and say it was him, but I had to like say, well, he does bench presses because blah, blah, blah. You know, but he didn't give me anything.
Yeah.
And that was the time, I think I told you the story. Not long after that, I go into Joe Weider's office, and Joe was telling me, he says, you know, anybody can write a bodybuilding, or anyone can interview a bodybuilder. It's nothing. He says, I remember now, the conversation was, I asked him why he pays photographers so much more than he does writers.
Mm.
As well, you have to understand, Jerry, bodybuilding is a visual sport, and the photography is most important. He says, as a matter of fact, the truth is anybody could write a bodybuilding article. So I said to him, I said, listen, Joe, I said, you think so, right? You think anybody can write? Let me tell you something. You know, you had me interview Kevin LeBron about 2 weeks ago. If you send in a guy who won the Pulitzer Prize and the Nobel Prize in Literature, and Kevin LeBrone, the guy would have run out of the room screaming in 5 minutes, because Kevin LeBrone was not answering. He was answering yes and no, yet I still managed to get an article. That takes experience, and it takes a certain amount of knowledge of bodybuilding. You know what I mean?
Right.
Not everybody can write. I think you're underestimating some of your life. I'm not necessarily talking about me. I'm talking about anyone.
Right.
But it turns out that after he turned pro, and since he wasn't watching himself on TV, LeBron, I did interview him several times after that, and he became quite loquacious. In other words, he was talking. He was great. I interviewed him at the Firehouse Restaurant in Venice. I remember one time I interviewed him. I even commented after the interview. I said, Kevin, big difference now from that first time. I said, you don't remember? I said, you were watching yourself on TV and you didn't answer me most of it. And he said, oh, man, I'm sorry about that. I guess I was just so focused. That's all right. Don't worry about it. It worked out okay, you know. But I interviewed him later on. He, I don't know if you remember, he got a pectoral tear.
Yeah, he tore it in 93. Yeah.
And it was, you know, there was a big controversy whether he'd be able to compete. This is because he was one of the top pros at the time.
Yeah. He got second in Olympia the year before. Yeah.
So I interviewed him about that. I interviewed him about whether he'd be able to compete again and this and that. And he talked about how he found a great surgeon who did a fantastic job.
Yeah.
So I said to him, well, how did it happen, Kevin? He says, well, I was doing, 450-pound bench press, something like that. Everything was good. Something gave. And, you know, he's good. Then suddenly he goes about 5 minutes, says, wait a minute, hold on. He says, Jerry, don't write that I did that it happened during bench presses. I said, why? He says, if you write that it happened during bench presses, people will think it was related to steroid use.
Mm.
So I said, what do you want me to write? He says, write that it happened with flies, chest flies. So I did. I wrote that. But, I wrote that it happened when he was lowering the weight from the fly. But it happened through, you know, I don't know why he would think.
Everybody tears their chest doing bench presses. It's always bench presses.
No, but I don't know why he would think that people would associate bench presses with steroids.
I don't know.
It doesn't, you know, I never figured that out. But, you know, what can I say?
He was always strong on bench presses. I mean, I've seen, like, those Road to the Olympia videos that Masaru Okabe used to do, and he was always benching 500 pounds. And this is like a couple of weeks before the contest, you know?
Yeah, he's strong in shoulder presses too.
Yeah, yeah.
And I see him doing, he's doing damn seated presses with 300 pounds.
Yeah, yeah.
Very strong. I mean, I saw him preparing for that. Remember that comeback he did? What was that, at 52, 53 years of age?
Yeah.
A couple of years ago when he tried to make a comeback in the Olympia. Yeah. I saw a tape of him training back east, you know, for the contest, and he was doing seated presses on a machine. It had to be like 300 pounds. It was like almost a press beyond the neck.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
And I'm thinking, oh, my God, he's using press beyond the neck with 300 at his age?
Yeah.
He'd tear his shoulder to bits.
Yeah, yeah.
And there was another occasion when he was doing a seminar, a thing called the Fit Expo they hold out here.
Yeah,
and
I remember that.
And I was walking by the room where he's giving the you know, the seminar. And I, of course, I had known Kevin. I had interviewed him a couple. So I stood in the back of the room and listened to him. And somebody asked him a question of what he did for shoulders. Because, you know, Kevin had great shoulders, you know. I remember him saying, he said, all I do for shoulders is lateral raises and rear lateral raises. So the guy says, no presses. He says, never do presses. I'm looking, I'm thinking, why is he saying that? I saw him do press. Why is he saying? I never could figure that out. But that's what he said, and I just left the room after that.
Yeah. Yeah, he was a pretty unique bodybuilder, and definitely one of the best pros of the '90s. So that was his contest where he got his pro card. So that was an amazing show.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then Flex, like you said, same thing as USA. He had a great physique. He just needed to be a little bit bigger. So that's 2 second places in a row. And then he finally won the next year at the USA, 92.
You know, Kevin underestimates his physique because after he competed in that, when he went, after he made that comeback, you know, that comeback attempt.
Yeah.
I had done a some sort of video review of the contest. And when I spoke about him, I said he's gotten in, you know, because remember, not long before, he had no physique. He kind of gave up. He became real small and stuff like that. I'm not going to say he had no muscle, but it looked nothing like the Kevin Glavroni, who was a pro bodybuilder. He had a very small body, comparatively small body. Mm-hmm. And he came back to enter the Olympia. And I remarked, I said, you know, to come back where he has most of his upper body muscle back.
Yeah. And
what was it? Was it 52 or 53?
I said 53, I think.
Yeah, I said that's a remarkable accomplishment. But Kevin has the problem that a lot of older bodybuilders get. His legs, unfortunately, did not come back to the way they were.
Right.
So it was a noticeable difference between his legs and his upper body, and I think that's why he didn't do well.
Yeah, his legs were really bad.
Right. So I get a call about 2 weeks after, and who is it? It's Kevin Levrone. And right away, I start to apologize. I thought he was calling because he was mad about what I said about the legs. He didn't know what I was talking about. I said, no, never mind, Kevin. What he called me for was he said to me, Jerry, he says, what are these guys doing now? I said, what do you mean? He says, these guys in the Olympia, they have these gigantic, full, round muscles that I've never seen before. He said, are they taking – what are they doing? What are they taking to get that look, you know? And I said, well, I'm not really sure. I said, I heard there's a rumor they take what they call side injections, all this stuff.
Yeah.
And I said, Kevin, he basically felt that he was like nothing compared to them.
Yeah.
I said, Kevin, you're underestimating yourself. I said, the physique you had in the 90s stands up to any one of these guys, and I believe would beat most of these guys today.
Yeah.
I said, don't put yourself down. You were a lot better than you think you were.
Yeah.
So he said, thanks. I said, well, keep in touch. And I never heard from him again. But, I mean, I was surprised that he said that because he thought that compared to, like, guys like Phil Heath and all those other guys, that he had almost no physique.
Yeah.
I don't believe that's true. You know,
he had been out of the competing for a long time, so that had a shock coming back, you know.
Yeah. I guess in his eyes, they looked a lot better. But he has to kind of compare him not to the way he looked at 52 or 53, but the way he looked when
in the
early 90s, like what we're talking about, that was a different Kevin Levrone. That
when
guy,
he was in his 20s, yeah.
That was a tricep. I mean, come on.
Yeah, right?
Like when he did this pose here with, you know, almost like the most muscular.
Yeah.
You take a look at, look up that photo on Google and compare it to like Phil Heath. He's right up there with Phil
Heath. Oh, yeah. I mean,
he's right up there with Phil Heath, just as good in that pose.
Yeah.
Just as good. Actually, a little better because his pecs were better than Heath's.
And then Ronnie Coleman was doing he had competed on a national level for a couple of years, but this one he ended up getting fourth place, and he supposedly was drug free because he got on the American team to go over to the World Championships where they did drug testing, and he won, and that was in Poland. I think he only weighed like 212 pounds, so
right.
Big difference from the Ronnie Coleman that would come along later.
Yeah, that's where I met. That's the year I met Ronnie Coleman, and I remember him telling me. I didn't ask him. He volunteered the information. He said he just mentioned that he was drug free. I said really. I said you must be very responsive. He says yeah. This man told me the story how he went into this gym in Texas and the guy offered him a membership or something like that. Mm-hmm. You know, and he responded amazingly fast. You know, I mean, he looked like a bodybuilder. He'd have been lifting weights for football and stuff like that, but he already had a bodybuilder's physique and this and that. But the point is that the thing that stands out in that conversation was, remember, he was still an amateur bodybuilder, like you say, 212 pounds, much smaller than he eventually became. And I said, Ronnie, what about when you turn pro? Aren't you going to be pressured into taking drugs to get the size and stuff? And he says, I don't see myself doing that. He says, I'm on the police force in Texas, and you know they do drug testing. He says, I can't take drugs even if I wanted to.
Well, that changed.
In retrospect, you have to laugh.
Yeah.
Turned out, you know.
But it's really amazing that he was able to take fourth place in the Nationals in that lineup.
Yeah.
Free, you know, that's a crap.
Yeah, he was just another genetic freak. I mean, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, there are people today who look at photos of him from that contest and say they liked his physique better then than he did when he won the Olympia.
Yeah.
Because they felt that he was too big at the Olympia.
Yeah. Well, he had that. Remember how tiny his waist was? He had that really small waist.
Very small waist.
Yeah.
Very small waist. Yeah.
Incredible shape, man. Unbelievable.
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, there's no way you could go from 212 to 275, whatever you weigh, and not have your waist get bigger. That's a
yeah, right. 290. Yeah.
Yeah. Can't do it.
Chris Aceto, the, you know, contest prep coach, he told a funny story because he knew Cormier back then, Chris Cormier. And Cormier had taken he took fourth at the USA. So Chris Cormier thought the way he's going to get his pro card is he'll go to the Nationals drug-free and try to get on the team and then go over to the team and win the Mr. Universe, and then he gets pro card, and then he could go compete as a pro, you know?
Yeah.
So Chris Aceto didn't go to the Nationals that year in Pittsburgh, but he thought for sure Cormier's going to get on the team. He said, no, he's going to be better than him. And he calls him up after the prejudging, and he goes, I don't think I'm going to make the team. And he goes, you got to be kidding me. Who goes, who's going to beat you? And he goes, there's this guy from Texas. He goes, he's huge. And he goes, he's drug-free? And he goes, yeah, he says he's drug-free. He goes, I think he's going to beat me.
That was
Ronnie Coleman. Ronnie took fourth, and Cormier only got seventh and never made the team because Ronnie was on the team.
Wow. Interesting story.
And Matt Mendenhall, that was Matt Mendenhall's last good year. He got fifth place, remember? He was big, real big, and a little bit smooth. But, man, he looked really good. He was a real strong fifth place in that contest.
Yeah, you know, he passed away not long ago.
Last year, yeah.
But, you know, the thing is that everyone always says the same thing about Mendenhall. He had all the gifts to be one of the greatest bodybuilders ever.
Yeah.
But if you look at his contest record, it's kind of mediocre for a guy with his physical
gift. Yeah, he never made it.
I mean, they always say the same thing about him. He just never peaked
at
a contest. He never was ripped or shredded. He looked great. I mean, Lee Haney, the greatest complimenter, Lee Haney called Mendenhall the most genetically gifted bodybuilder
he'd
ever seen. You know, that's a great compliment coming from an 8-time Mr. Olympia.
Yeah.
I mean, it would have been really interesting to me to see Mendenhall shredded. Imagine him ripped with that muscle shape that he had.
Right.
He's another guy that had huge calves, big, giant form, everything.
Eyes, everything.
Yeah, eyes were great.
Wide shoulders.
Yeah, white shoulder. Imagine him ripped.
Man.
He really would have been unbeatable. Who could beat that? Nobody.
I know.
Nobody. It's a shame. You know, I don't know what the problem was. I don't know.
And this was almost 10 years after he kind of made his national debut because he took second to Lee Haney in 1982. Right. And now think about that. Lee Haney and Mendenhall go up against each other at the Nationals. Haney gets first. Mendenhall gets second. Haney goes on to win the Mr. Olympia 8 times, and this was the year that he retired. I guess Haney was at this contest handing out trophies, and this was after he already retired after winning the Mr. Olympia 8 times, and poor Matt Mendenhall still trying to get his pro card, and he never made it.
It's amazing. Yeah. Again, but genetically, it just goes to show you, even with the great genetics, sometimes you just can't get it together.
Yeah.
I've seen many guys over the years like that. They had, you know, you look at these guys. You couldn't match their genetics, but they never went anywhere. The head wasn't there, or they just couldn't get cut or whatever. There's always reasons for it, you know?
Yeah, it's a shame. It's a real shame he passed away at such a young age.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Yeah, he's a nice guy. I know him pretty well.
And Porter Cottrell won the light heavyweight class, and Porter went on to become a really great pro bodybuilder as well.
Yeah, Porter was a friend of mine, too. He was a firefighter in, I believe, was it Kentucky or Tennessee?
Kentucky, yeah.
Yeah, he's a happy guy today. He's married, has a kid. You know, he's pretty happy, still works out.
Yeah. But
I remember Porter was going to compete in a Night of the Champions show in New York. And I think it was after the prejudging. And they called me to his room. And he told me that he had to drop out of the contest. And he was like, he would have won. He was in great shape.
Hmm.
I said, Porter, what's the problem? He told me he had severe constipation, so severe that he couldn't even pose.
Damn. Wow.
So he added, this is a guy who had a dropout of a contest that he probably could have won because he was severely constipated.
What year was this, Jerry?
Early 90s. I can't remember exact year.
Okay.
Yeah. But I know, I can't remember whether it was either before the prejudging or after, but I know he had to drop out. And that's, it was never, you know, I never wrote it. Or, you know, it was a personal thing. It was never publicized, you know, but that's the reason why he couldn't compete. I mean, it must have been pretty bad, you know?
Yeah.
That's what I always tell the bodybuilders, make sure you get that fiber there.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, don't ever cut fiber out, whatever you do, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, let's finish off by talking about the Olympia. This was, of course, I think one of the greatest Mr. Olympias ever. It was in Orlando, Florida at the Disney World Hotel, I think.
Yeah.
And it was Lee Haney's last victory, his eighth and final Mr. Olympia. This is the first time anyone had beaten Arnold's record.
Right.
So he won the eighth Mr. Olympia. No one, and Arnold, of course, had won seven.
Right.
And if you watch that tape, man, I mean, it's just amazing contest because I thought Lee was at his best. That was the best he ever looked. Yeah. And all the guys, all the top guys were in great shape and they had great posing routines.
Yeah.
I've heard a lot of people say that this was kind of the last Mr. Olympia that was like the real era before it went over and changed and then it got too much, you know, because then in the 90s, as we talked about, growth hormone came in. And the bodybuilders just had a whole new look. They didn't look like these guys anymore. They kind of didn't even look human anymore. Like I was talking about Dorian Yates.
Yeah.
And when I saw him guest pose, it was like a different look. The guys were just supersized, you know, and they stopped looking like human beings. But at this contest, Lee won. Dorian was in second place and Dorian was much smaller. But this was probably the first time that Dorian was really challenged by somebody who had a similar structure of a similar height. Because I remember all those times before when Lee Haney was winning, he was going up against smaller guys like, you know, Lee Labrada or Rich Gaspari or Albert Beckles or Muhammad McAway. He just dwarfed them and they really didn't have a chance. Right. And this was, and then when he went up against a big guy like Mike Christian or Gary Stridham, they just didn't have the symmetry that Lee had. So they really never challenged him. So this was the first time a guy had the structure, the size, the height, and he really, really challenged Dorian. So, I mean, he really challenged Lee. So it was really went down to the wire.
Yeah, that's very true. Yeah. As you said, Lee was a little bit bigger than him.
Yeah.
But Dorian was very hard that year.
Yeah.
That's the year I was told that there'd be, you know, a new Mr. Olympia there. Was also a controversy because earlier, not long before the contest, Lee had signed a contract with TwinLab.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Muscular Development Magazine, you know, and that was Weider's kind of arch enemy.
Yeah.
His rival. And, you know, the rumor was that they weren't going to let Lee Haney win.
Right.
Because he had signed with TwinLab. That was a very strong rumor going.
Yeah, I heard that too. I remember that.
So, you know, when that official came up to me in the lobby and said to me this was going to be a new Mr. Olympia that night, I thought about the rumor. I said, it could very well be.
Yeah.
He would lose the contest because they don't want him to set the record. And you know, and because he had kind of like, if you want to call it disloyal to Weider, they'd arrange for him to lose. So, you know,
that was pretty risky on Lee Haney's part doing that.
Yeah, it really was, you know, but yeah. I guess the only thing I can think of, he must have had enough confidence in himself because he probably believed there's no way they could take the title away from me if I come in at my best or even a little bit improved. I think that's what his mindset was.
Well, if you think back then too, Jerry, I mean, it wasn't that often that a incumbent Mr. Olympia was getting beat, remember?
No. No, I always talk about that. I call it the incumbent factor.
Yeah.
I've written it dozens of times, meaning that the guy who wins the Mr. Olympia already has, I use an imagine, I give it like 10 points. I said he already has an edge even before the curtain opens.
Yeah.
Because he's the standard.
Yeah.
As the previous winner, he's the physique that all the others are being measured against.
Yeah.
So if the guy who's the incumbent Mr. Olympia, if he's either improved or at least, again,
the same.
duplicated his condition the year before, unless somebody else has improved tremendously,
yeah,
he was almost by default. That's the way it's always worked.
Right.
And that's how, and I'm not saying he didn't make any improvement, but that's how Dorian Yates did improve. But Lee Haney, kind of like, he was an example of that. He didn't improve that greatly, but he held his own in all the years that he won, and maybe a little bit bigger in that final show. He had a little bit more size at the 91, I think.
Well, also what happened, remember, was in 1990 they did the drug testing, and that's he right. was way down in size.
Yeah.
So and now when he came back in 91, he was way better, way right. better.
Even though he was down in size at that 90 show, remember, that's the only show where they weighed the bodybuilders in front of an audience. And they had a press conference where they brought all the
bodies. That was 88, I think.
What was that, 88?
Yeah.
Oh, you're right. I'm sorry. You're right. Yeah but okay, because I was going to say Lee was the biggest.
He weighed like, 246 or something, yeah.
Way ahead of, what's his name? Gaspari, his rival.
Yeah.
With 205.
It's right, different. Right.
But I mean, that's true. Right, about Haney.
Maybe that's why he was so big. Maybe because he cleaned out from the drugs, and then the next year he responded more, you know?
I think Lee knew, Lee Haney was smart enough to know that he knew that by signing with Twin Lab, he had a couple of strikes against him where if he came in off in any way, he'd lose.
Plus, I think he knew about Dorian, how good Dorian was, because Dorian had won the Night of the Champions.
Yes, Dorian was already known. He established himself as the guy as the top guy. So Lee went all out. Lee Haney went all out to be the best he could possibly be.
Yeah.
And that's what happened. He was a little bit bigger than he was, I think, the year before. And, of course, definitely bigger than 90 because it's
yeah.
But, bigger than, let's say, 89, 88. And that was enough to, plus the slightly better back.
Yeah. And really good condition, too.
Excellent condition. He was in peak condition. I think I would say I've seen Lee win a couple of his Olympias. I would say that the 91 show was the best he ever looked.
Yeah, I would, too. I would, too.
So,
It was interesting, too. They always ask him, why didn't you announce you were going to be retiring? Because he never announced that he was retiring at 21.
Right.
I remember he went to the microphone and he said, he goes, they're asking me if I'm going to retire. And he goes, I don't know. He goes, I finally learned how to peak. So he goes, he kind of left it open, like maybe he'll come back next year, but he never did.
Right.
But you know what kind of makes me think that he was going to retire, that he knew it?
What's that?
If you see his posing routine, he did the exact same routine that he did in 84 when he won it the first time.
No kidding. Wow.
Yeah.
I didn't realize.
You remember that he posed to Excalibur? Remember the movie Excalibur?
Sure.
I remember how he did the two musics. He had the one music, and then he had the music from Excalibur. Right. And in the middle of it, after the first music was over with, he lunged down and he put his arms out.
Yes.
And he held that pose for like a couple seconds.
Right.
I remember that in 84. That was very unusual.
Yeah.
And then the music from Excalibur started, and he did the exact same routine and the exact same music that he did in 84. So I thought it was a perfect ending. He couldn't time it any better.
Did he finish with that pose also?
Yeah, he did that in the middle. And then he did the music from Excalibur again. Yeah.
That might have been a subtle message that this was his.
That what a great way to end it. It's like it was perfect.
Yeah. I also believe that so Lee Haney doesn't strike me as a guy who would be afraid of Dorian Yates. But, he might have said in his mind, look, I won it 8 times. What's the point of going on and on? I'm kind of looking at his point of view.
Yeah.
What's the point of going on and on and on?
How many times are you going to do it? Yeah.
I mean, what's the odds of somebody winning it 8 times? I probably won't win it for 20 years.
Right.
So,
right.
No matter what he does, even if he's conservative on drug use, whatever, it's still a huge strain on your body to prepare for a Mr. Olympia contest. It's a tremendous strain on the body. Plus, he had the family and his wife and his kids and all that. And the thing is,
don't you think too, Jerry? He might have saw that the sport's starting to change, the growth hormones coming in, and the guys are getting freaky. Do I want to go that route?
I'm sure that influenced him. I'm sure it did, because I remember
the thing he always had was he had that tiny waist with the big. Yeah. You know, he had the. He was like, he always said, he was like, I was 250 pounds or 245 pounds with a 29 inch waist.
Right, right. Yeah.
No one had that.
At one of the Olympias that was held in Atlanta a couple of years later, you know, I ran into Lee, and, you know, he mentioned to me that he was 31 or 32 years old at the time. I can't remember.
Yeah.
And he made a joke. You know, we were talking, he's, because, you know, he was retired by then. We were talking actually about Vince Taylor. I remember the conversation. I asked him who he thinks would be like his successor as a top guy. And he says, I think Vince Taylor has all the goods to duplicate what I did. I think he can win the Olympia over and over again. Right. So then I said, why did you retire, Lee? I asked him this. And he pointed to his head. He was going bald. You know, he was, you know, he's going bald. Now, you know, today he has a shaved head, but you can see he was bald. And he says, look at me. I says, I'm 32 years old. I'm already bald. He says, I'm aging like crazy. If I would have kept it up, I might have been dead in a year or two.
So wow, yeah.
I got out while I still could.
Yeah.
And we laughed, you know.
Yeah.
I remember him saying, he made a joke about it. It was funny. You know,
not many guys will go out like that on top. Not many. You know, they keep coming back, not just in bodybuilding, but in all sports.
Oh, boxing is famous for that.
Yeah.
I mean, you get a guy, I mean, just to take a name, probably what many consider this man the greatest pound-for-pound boxer in history, a guy named Sugar Ray Robinson.
Yeah.
He was actually a dancer. He was a professional who became a bodybuilder. So, not a bodybuilder, a boxer. When he was in the ring, he literally was dead. He was so light on
his feet. Yeah.
You couldn't put a glove on him. I mean, plus, he had power. He could knock you out with one punch.
Yeah.
He had an unbeatable combination, and he was like literally unbeatable, but he stayed in too long. He started getting hit over and over again.
Yeah.
He was losing to guys that he would have knocked out in one round. He was still fighting. He was nearly 50 years old, right?
Yeah.
This was no Albert Beckles, and you can't do that in boxing.
Right.
So he got hit in the head so much that he got this form of dementia that some boxers get. It's called pugilistic dementia, where it causes enough brain damage where it looks exactly like Alzheimer's disease.
Right.
The last couple of years, he couldn't even recognize his own wife. Very sad.
Oh, man.
So you know, the point being that, you know, you see this in a lot of various sports where the guys, you know, they just can't keep away. You know, they got to come back. And I just don't understand it, because not only does it mean – not only is the chances of winning slim, but you also kind of, in a lot of people's minds, it sullies your reputation.
Yeah, yeah. Or
you look at a guy like Kevin Livroni, who I don't think anyone would deny was a fantastic bodybuilder.
Right.
But when he came back and didn't even place at 53 years of age, I see people online, these little punk trolls who never even saw this guy in person when he was at his best. He was overrated. He was nothing.
Yeah.
He can't beat these guys. You know, in other words, it's like all of his victories in the past
didn't mean anything.
Didn't mean anything. You know
right.
what I mean? Or Larry Scott was another one.
Yeah.
Olympia. Won two Mr. Olympias consecutive, 65-66. He came back, started entering a pro show. I remember there was a pro show. I remember it was either Vancouver or somewhere.
79, yeah. 1979.
Mm-hmm. What did he place? Like not even fourth or fifth or sixth? Or,
no, worse. It was like real bad.
He placed very low.
Yeah. This
was a two-time Mr. Olympia. Didn't even.
Yeah. Who was a legend. Yeah.
A legend.
Yeah.
Even today people talk about him, you know?
Yeah.
Richard Baldwin, my friend, says that Larry Scott has the best arms in bodybuilding history, you know?
Yeah.
I wouldn't disagree with, but they were saying the same thing about him. He was overrated. This guy is nothing, you know?
Right.
But in his day, he was great. He was he was fantastic.
Yeah. So
that's a problem when you come back past your prime.
Yeah.
You risk that.
We were talking about Haney posing to the same music that he posed to when he won the first Olympia.
Yeah.
Well, Ronnie Coleman lost to Jay Cutler in 2006, and that would have been his ninth Mr. Olympia because he would have broke the record, but he won eight like Haney did.
Right.
He came back the next year in 2007. And he was way down in size from just 1 year earlier. I mean, significantly way down. Because, like, you could look at the last few, like the 2004, 2005, 2006. You could see his physique was starting to get worse, but he was still huge, you know. But in 2007, he dropped down in size a lot more. I remember I was at the show, and he came out and he posed to the same music, the same routine that he won in 98, the first time he won it. Wow. And it was sad to watch because it wasn't the same physique. And I'm sitting there watching it, and I'm like, oh, man, it's just sad to watch, you know.
To me,
he got fourth place.
Well, I was also sad to me. You mentioned 84, Sergio Oliva.
Yeah.
Three-time Mr. Olympia. I mean, I didn't really get along with Sergio Senior that well. But I always give him credit as being one of the greatest bodybuilders, easily one of the most genetically gifted bodybuilders in bodybuilding history. But
yeah,
it was sad to see this guy, and he looked pretty good. I think you'll agree at the end.
Yeah, in his 40s, yeah.
It's not that he looked bad, but he got, was it eighth place he got?
Yeah.
I mean, it was very. I remember feeling actually sorry. I felt bad.
Yeah.
I said, this guy was so legendary when he won. The years he was at his peak.
Yeah.
He gets eighth place.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm thinking to myself, I remember Arnold himself when Sergio won the Olympia. I think it was it 69. I remember I showed Arnold a picture of Sergio doing this pose in Iron Man. And Arnold looked at this is when we were both at Vince's gym, and Arnold looks at it. He says, "Nobody could beat this guy."
Yeah.
Arnold Schwarzenegger said this about Sir. He says he's absolutely indomitable. Nobody can beat this guy.
Yeah.
And those words were in my mind when I saw him get eighth place, and I just really felt bad for the guy.
I know. Because
again, you know, the idiots, the small minded people. Well, look at that and say, well, you know, maybe he wasn't so great after all. Look, he only got
eight.
Oh, give me a break, man.
Yeah, it kind of ruins your reputation when you go out like that, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it's a set. But
Lee Haney was one. I mean, I can't think of anyone else who went out on top like Lee Haney. I mean, what a magical career that guy had. It's unbelievable.
But I have a theory about that multi-Mr. Olympia thing. I think that there's a reluctance to have the records broken. You know what I'm saying? In other words,
yeah.
Like the two guys that hold the record, correct me if I'm wrong, are Lee Haney and Ronnie Coleman. They won eight Mr. Olympia titles. Do I have that right? Is that right?
Right.
Now, what's his name? Phil Heath was trying to win his seventh in his was it his seventh Mr. Olympia?
He won seven. He was trying to win eight.
Eight. That's it. You're right. Yeah. Okay. That makes more sense because I was saying it doesn't make sense. Yeah. In other words, he was trying to match the record.
Right.
He wanted to be the third man to win the Mr. Olympia eight times.
Right.
And I remember hearing rumors that they didn't want him to be the match the record. Some people up in the bodybuilding hierarchy didn't like Phil Heath.
Yeah.
For whatever reason, you know, they didn't want him to tie the record. So he had like things going against him going into that, even though he was the incumbent Mr. Olympia who should have had the edge.
Yeah.
It reversed where he had to prove himself to win. If there's anything wrong with him, they would have used that as an excuse to give it to the guy. And that's exactly what happened.
Yeah, he was off.
He had the stomach. His stomach was still sticking out. God, I'm bad on names.
Sean Roden.
Sean Roden, who was a friend of mine. I can't believe I'm just so bad on names. Sean Roden comes in peaked in the best shape of his life. There's the excuse. We're giving it to Sean Roden.
Yeah.
They didn't want Heath to win.
Well, you know what happened with Ronnie, too? Yeah. Like, Haney kind of said, okay, I'm going to beat Arnold's record, and then I'm out.
Right.
You know, he was done after eight because he tied Arnold's record with seven, then he won eight, and he said, I'm not going to get greedy, I'm out. I remember the day they had the press conference for Ronnie, what did Mr. Olympia in 2006, when Ronnie was going for his ninth. They said, if you win, are you going to retire? And he goes, no, I'm just going to keep going. I'll bet the judges look at each other and go, how many times have we got to give this guy the title? Well, he was a little bit off, and Jay was looking really good that year. And Jay had been knocking on the door for like 3 years in a row. Yeah. So I bet they said, you know what, let's just give it to Jay.
Well, you know, when they asked the same question to Phil Heath after he'd won it about four times, they said, Phil, how many times do you want to win the Olympia? He says, 10 in a row.
Yeah, he said he wanted to win 10. Yeah.
Remember that?
Yeah.
Never made it.
Yeah.
Never made it.
No.
I believe that. Let me ask you a question as a bodybuilding historian yourself. Do you foresee anyone in the next couple of years? Well, it'd have to be a couple of years. Do you foresee anyone beating the 8-time record? Will there be a bodybuilder who will be able to win it, let's say, 9 times in a row? Do you see anybody on the horizon?
No, I don't think so. Because like what we were talking about before, the amount of drugs you got to do to win it once or twice, you're not going to last 8 times. You'll never last.
This is my opinion. I'll tell you, my opinion exactly coincides with you. I say no, nobody will win it 9 times for the exact reason. It's a self-defeating situation.
Yeah.
Meaning that even if they have everything going for them, the genetics, the shape, the improvement every year, everything is right online. The drug use, the use of the drugs will somehow escalate or something's going to give.
Yeah.
Nobody's going to make it to that 9-time finish line.
No.
It's just not going to happen.
Plus, you got all these other freaks coming in every year.
You got always these freaks coming out. Like you say, they come out of nowhere. Matarazzo, yeah. LeBron. Who knows who could show up?
Right. This
guy from Cuba who is like
right.
I believe his brother. Some guy, it's 6
Little foot eight or something, yeah.
Weighing 6'8", weighing 3.
Right.
Makes everybody look like a dwarf on stage. You can never tell.
Right.
So I don't see that. I don't see anyone. I mean, if these guys are lucky, I mean, they'll drop out and not die. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They'll just say, well, I got an injury or this and that, you know, and have an excuse. But nobody's going to make it to 9 because the way bodybuilding, especially pro bodybuilding, the way it is today with the drug use, nobody's going to make it to 9. It's not.
No. That eight
win record held by Coleman and Haney will last. Forever. Bodybuilding exists.
Yeah, yeah.
Until the sun burns out, whatever.
Yeah.
It's just the way. And now, let me also say, if things weren't like this with the heavy drug use, and the increased chance of injuries and all that, then I believe somebody might have emerged.
Yeah.
So great that they could win it 10, 12, 15 times.
Yeah.
That would get very tight. I think the audience, everybody would be sick of seeing that.
Yeah.
I think if a guy won it more than, let's say, 10 times, I think people would lose interest after. Oh,
yeah. Come on.
This is ridiculous. I don't want to see this stuff. The guy's going to win again. There's no excitement to it.
But yeah. It's not like Arnold's era where Arnold would, you know, as we've talked about on the show before, come off the drugs, come back, peak again.
Right.
I mean, that was a safe way to do it. He could win it 6 times in a row back then, and it was no big deal. And he was getting better and better every year, except for that last year when he made that movie.
Right.
But he was getting better like 72, 73, 74. He's getting better. And then he was beating everybody, and there was no competition for him. He could have kept going, you know.
He could have kept going. And like you say, he had the two factors going for himself. He got off the drugs.
Yeah.
He let his body heal. And also, he didn't stay on the drugs all year round.
Right.
Two things the guys today aren't doing.
Right.
They on the drugs all the time. What do they call it? Or something like that? I can't remember.
But yeah, they never get off. They never get off.
So they're not giving their body a chance to recover.
I think if they got off, they would lose probably 50 pounds.
Oh, yeah.
And it would take them like another 6 months to gain the 60 pounds, 50 pounds back.
Yeah.
It'd be stupid. They have to stay on all the time.
They have to stay all the time. And not only that, the psychological price to pay to see yourself drop that much weight would be too much, guys.
Yeah.
They couldn't handle it. You know, it's like a guy on heroin. I mean, I'm not taking the heroin. And then he goes, give me the heroin, you know.
Yeah, right.
They can't take it.
They would go backwards so much physically that they could never do it.
They can't take it. So, you know, if you add it up.
And then this is the way I think, Jerry, that everybody does it. Every pro does it like this now. So
every pro.
Where before, like in Arnold's era, everybody would get off.
Right.
You know, they respected the drugs and they would get off the drugs. Absolutely. And then they would all get back on before the show.
If they did that, then a guy could theoretically win it 10 times. So we'll
pick
it up. As you said.
No.
And the thing is, when you add it all up, I hate to use this word. It's like these guys are doomed.
Yeah.
Something's going to happen to them. And I think I said it to you. I said in a couple of videos, the only thing these guys can do is be closely medically monitored, have blood tests, have even all the extra tests, calcium score, all these, these off the road tests to find out exactly how their heart's doing, whether they're heading to cancer or anything like that.
Yeah.
That's all they can do. And if they don't do that, they're dead meat. They're dead men walking. They will die because some of the things that can kill them, John, you don't get a lot of advance warning.
No.
You know, like,
and it's probably years down the road. It's not going to happen right now.
Yeah. I mean, a massive stroke, a massive heart attack.
Yeah.
It's like a bullet. I mean, boom, 1 minute you're alive, next minute you're dead.
Yeah.
So unless these guys monitor themselves, and I do believe it's not just me. There's others that have been, you know, making videos telling, you know, because of these recent deaths, they're telling bodybuilders to be more aware of their medical condition.
Yeah.
Hopefully it's getting to the bodybuilders and their coaches where they're starting to pay more attention to this stuff.
Yeah.
Because if they aren't, we're going to see a lot more deaths.
Yeah. At younger and younger ages, too.
Yeah, it's going to be a regular thing now, unless they do something. You know what I mean?
It seems like it is a regular thing now.
And as far as the powers that be that run bodybuilding, they couldn't care less. I hate to complain about it. You know, they don't do anything to institute safety measures. There's no drug testing. There's no.
Well, the only thing they could really do is just start awarding the title to other people. But then there's going to be too much. The bodybuilding fans are going to be like, what the hell are you doing? How can this smaller guy win?
Yeah.
You know, he's not in open bodybuilding. You got to be a freak to be an open. I mean, it's just how do you change it now? You know, it's like it's gone for this many years, this many decades. It's been the mass monsters. How do you change the trend now? It would be too hard.
You can't. I mean, there's nothing you can do.
Never go back to the Frank Zane era. It's never going to happen.
I mean, I think this is why they say that the other divisions like the
Classic,
Men's Physique and the Classic are becoming increasingly far more popular.
Mm-hmm.
If you go on Instagram, the guys that are bodybuilders, you don't see that many pros, but you see a lot of these, you know, Men's Physique guys and Classic. They put dozens of pictures of themselves, and they got like 100,000 people following them or more. There's
more people want to look at it like that, yeah.
Exactly. They, you can see the popularity is there.
Yeah. So
what does that mean? In the long run, if this trend continues, the Mr. Olympia is going to be a really, really fringe type of thing, attracting only muscle freaks.
Yeah.
I want to see the giant bodybuilder. It's going to get less and less popular with time. And, again, I hope this doesn't happen, but if guys – do start to die off, then it's going to really be in trouble.
And yeah.
That's going to, I mean, and then it's going to attract the.
Well, I mean, we just had a Mr. Olympia winner from only a couple of years ago die at 46 years old. I mean, what more do you need, you know?
Yeah. But I mean, that got a lot of publicity.
Yeah.
I see, you know, old sites having nothing to do with bodybuilding. Mr. Olympia dies at 46.
Yeah.
But if it happens with the competitors, not necessarily the Mr. Olympia, if the competitors start to die on a regular basis, people are going to look at this thing and can say, hey, this is a dangerous thing, man.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not going to support this. I mean, these guys are killing themselves. Who wants to watch that?
And bringing it back to Marvin Etter, you know, we got a guy who did it right, who did it for health, who was just a genetic freak and was super strong and had a great physique, lived to 90 years old, you know.
Yeah. Well, look at Bill Pearls, 91.
Yeah.
Oldest Mr. America. He won it back in 53.
Yeah.
He's still alive.
Yeah. You know,
Bill took steroids, but he never took nothing like these guys.
No, no.
I mean, and he's been a octo-oval vegetarian for years.
Yeah.
Pretty good with his diet and stuff like that.
Yeah. So
that accounts for his longevity.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't, like I said earlier, you can't fool Mother Nature.
No, you can't. So,
I mean, I wish the best for these guys. I'm not trying to be gloom and doom here. I mean, I hate to
say it. No, I don't think any of us are. You know, I don't want anybody to die either, but.
But yeah, I have to be honest. This is what I mean, I write about this stuff all the time. I read the medical journals. I see the case reports of people that have gotten in trouble. I know what's going to happen. You know what I mean? I if I didn't read this stuff, maybe I wouldn't think like this.
You know what kind of bothers me too, Jerry, is when I listen to some of these other podcasts. I don't want to name any of them, but. Yeah. There's some podcasts out there where they have a lot of pros talking, and they kind of just dismiss natural bodybuilding. They think it's a joke. Like, who would want to be natural? It's such a joke. It's such like this is bodybuilding. In bodybuilding, you've got to take drugs. You know, period. End of story. If you want to be in bodybuilding, you got to take drugs. It's like it's so unnatural to think of a natural bodybuilder. You know, it's just it's the weirdest thing ever to these guys.
Yeah.
And like I said, they think like. 50 is way old, way old. I mean, I'm going to turn 59 next month. I mean, 50 is not old, you know. It's amazing just their mentality and how they think, their attitude, it just amazes me.
Well, it's I mean, for many, many years, bodybuilding was completely natural.
Yeah.
It started out, as I said earlier, bodybuilding is...
Reg Park, Marvin Etter, Steve Reeves, all those guys.
Bodybuilding is an inherently, or weight training, bodybuilding, whatever you want to call it, it's an inherently very healthy activity. It becomes warped when you start taking a ton of drugs.
Yeah.
What do you mean? I mean, like Marvin says, that's not bodybuilding anymore.
No.
Some sort of, you know, and those guys in those podcasts, I've seen them too. In fact, I blocked a couple of them because once you watch one of them, there's some sort of logarithm where every time I go on YouTube, they put, you know, and I blocked them all. I don't want to see these guys.
Yeah.
I don't want to see them. You know what I mean? I have nothing against them personally, but I don't want to hear them talk about the drugs they use and how natural bodybuilders are garbage. And I don't want to hear that because that's bullshit. These guys are fooling themselves. They're going to, you know, if they think there's a, I've seen some of the stupidest statements that turn my stomach. One guy was saying that you could take any amount of Decadurablin and not have any side effect. Where do they get this crap from? Where do they get this stuff from? You know, I can't stand to hear it. It actually annoys me. I have nothing to do with the drug. It annoys me just to hear them giving out that extent of misinformation.
Yeah.
Knowing that some kid somewhere is going to look at this guy talking with his 20-inch arm. You can't get sick. I'm going to get the Decadurablin. I'm going to get those 22-inch. And then the kid gets all screwed up because he listens to that maniac.
Yeah.
I'd rather have guys listen to a guy like you. You know, clean bodybuilding, train the old school weight, heavy weights. You know, look, I don't care what your genetics are. If you train, and I've written this, if you train properly, you follow good nutrition, you can maximize your physique. Maybe you won't be a super elite pro bodybuilder.
Right.
But you'll have a fantastic, and I say this for anybody. I don't care what, if you do it right, you're going to make startling improvement. And
this
all the way up to over 50 years of age.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've seen guys over 50 who haven't trained in 30 years. I've seen this. They've come back. They start. They had to start easy. Remember, they hadn't trained.
Yeah.
Some of these guys were completely out of shape. It took them a couple of years. They got back where some of these guys are now competing in Masters shows. And they're ripped. They don't take any drugs. You've seen these guys. They're sliced.
Right. I mean,
they're amazing.
Yeah.
They came back. That's one of the wonders of proper training.
Yeah.
It's amazing what you could do if you give it a chance.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, this notion that you have to, like these guys say, that you have to take drugs to be a true bodybuilder. I say, go to hell. You're full of crap. That's garbage.
Yeah.
You know, I would switch it around. I said, if you want to take a lot of drugs and be a bodybuilder, make sure you have a living will. That's what I
think. Yeah. Remember what John Balik used to say? There's no free lunch. Remember?
No free lunch.
No free lunch. You're going to have to pay for it sooner or later.
Yeah. I mean, if I say to you, I don't want to get into the anti-vax because you get a bunch of nasty cow. I won't get into it.
Right, that's a whole other discussion.
If I say to you, hey, John, you know what? I think this notion of gravity is bull. I don't believe it. I think the scientists made it up. I don't think it really exists. I think if birds can fly, why can't we? I'm going to go to the top of that 200-story building, and I'm going to prove it to you. I'm going to leap off, and you're going to watch me fly across town.
Right.
What's going to happen is you're going to go straight down, and you're going to be splattered into a thousand.
Right.
Birds. What you believe doesn't mean a thing if it doesn't jive with the facts.
Right, right, right. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how it's going to all land out, Jerry, but
I just have a bad feeling, you know what I mean? I just hope I'm wrong, but, you know, I mean, I don't remember. Okay, some of the guys that are dying, like Marvin, they're older guys, but you still see.
Yeah, 90 years old. I mean, that's I'd love to go that far, you know.
Well, they say the average lifespan of a man now is 72 to 74, so he lived a normal lifespan.
Yeah.
Well, you know, when a guy or a woman dies in the 20s or 30s, that's not normal.
No.
That is not normal.
No.
You know, and you know, and it seems to happen a little bit too often for my likes, you know.
Yeah.
I don't remember seeing any of this happen when I competed years ago.
No.
Mm-mm. I don't remember hearing bodybuilders die off like this.
No.
I never saw any of this. You know,
and it's really up to the individual. You don't have to do what everybody else does. I mean, it's up to you, man. I mean, if you want to do this sport and you're going to take that risk, then you're taking the risk. But I mean, you just because you're in the sport doesn't mean you have to play it this way. You can play it whatever way you want to play it. It's your life.
That's one thing that brings up a point, John. Here's what I would advise people, anyone listening to this. If you have a coach, fine. You know, you have a coach in bodybuilding, fine. But here's what you do. Use your brain.
Yeah.
If they're giving you a drug program that doesn't look right to you, research it yourself. Don't just take what this guy or this girl tells you to take because they might have trained somebody who was successful. Don't think that the same program is going to work for you. It could be deadly. If they tell you to take, for example, a bunch of diuretics, and a little voice says, wait a minute, this doesn't seem right, and you go online and you look up the toxic effects of that dose of diuretic, don't listen to them.
Right.
If you don't want to work with any more talent, to get lost. It's not worth risking your life. Don't just listen to these people. You know what I mean?
If you're like a bikini competitor, you know, and they say, well, in order to make it a bikini, you got to take this and you got to take that to get the harvest. I mean, you should just say, no, I'm not going to do it then. I'm out. I'm either going to do it natural or I'm out.
They're telling these bikini girls to take clenbuterol and thyroid to lose body fat. I asked one of these girls, I said, do you know what clenbuterol is? She says, isn't it a fat burner? That's all she knew. She knew nothing else. I said, do you know how it works? I said, do you know what the possible side effects? No, but my coach, he's worked with this, that. She mentioned like five girls in one title. He says, he knows what he's doing. I trust him.
Yeah.
I said, well, you know, I briefly told her what could happen if she takes too much clenbuterol.
Yeah.
And I could tell it went in one ear and out the other. She figures, who am I? Who have I coached? I'm some guy in the gym. I'm not going to listen to him.
Right.
God help her is all I could say.
Yeah. I mean,
just use common sense. Come on.
Yeah.
Don't listen to everything these people say. They're not doctors. Most have no medical background.
Right.
Use common sense. If they tell you to take something that seems out of line, research it yourself. It could save your life. It will save your life.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if you're getting the sport of bodybuilding to improve your look, improve your physique, then improve your physique, but you don't have to take drugs. If you want to compete without drugs, then compete without drugs. But you don't have to take them. I mean, you should do something that's going to make you look and feel better. I mean,
you
just got to do it for yourself.
Yeah, and the thing that really gets me, and I've written this also many times, is these guys and women who have no intention of competing, but they take the same drug programs.
Yeah.
They'll see some drug regime listed that some pro takes.
Yeah.
You know, they want to be muscular. They want to have the abs and they want to look good. So they figured, I think I'll use that guy's drug and give me that look I want. But they have no intention of competing. So they put their health in jeopardy for no reason because they think they have to take those drugs to get that look.
Yeah, it seems like the drugs are just so accepted now. It's like people aren't even fearful of them anymore, you know?
And what gets me is they don't even know how they work.
Right.
They don't know what could happen.
Right.
They have this idea because all these other guys and girls take it that it must be okay. No, you can never tell. I've always said and I've written that the worst thing about, for example, steroids is you can't really predict what's going to happen. I mean, it could maybe help you build some muscle, or if you have some sort of genetic quirk that you're not aware of,
right,
it can push you into a heart attack.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, like this guy, Dallas McCarver, from what I understand, he died of a massive heart attack. He had people in his family that had heart disease.
Right, right.
He was set up to have cardiovascular problems.
Right.
The worst thing he could have done is take huge amounts of steroids.
Right, right.
And look what happened. Dead at 27. See?
Yeah. Unbelievable.
I don't know.
Well, thanks for going over 1991, Jer. I mean, we got off on a tangent here, but it was a pretty incredible year for bodybuilding because you had a lot of – it was almost like the beginning of a new generation was coming in. You know, you had
you had
Kevin Lavroni, you had Flex Wheeler right there, and then Lee Haney was retiring, and then you had Dorian Yates coming up. So it was like the 90s were starting, and this was the new generation of bodybuilders. And it was a pretty amazing year.
Unfortunately, it also heralded the big drug use and the dangerous drug use era.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, still exists today.
That's what I say. It's almost like the 1991 Olympia is kind of thought of as the last real Mr. Olympia, before it got too crazy, you know.
I, I would agree with that. Yeah. I
could. Me too. Yeah. And it was a great Olympia because the guys still looked fantastic and everybody had great posing routines. And then seeing Lee Haney retire was, yeah, he was probably one of our greatest champions ever in the history of the sport.
No question about it. Absolutely. Yeah. Great guy too.
Yeah. And he's still healthy and happy and still a great representative of the sport. You know,
he is for sure. Yeah.
He did it right.
Yep. Yep. That's true.
Okay, Jer. Well, I guess till next time. Thank you again for joining me. Applied Metabolics is your newsletter. We will have the link right here on the description so people can sign up for it.
Yeah, appliedmetabolics.com. Yeah.
Right.
And I have articles in there, you know, where even the people on the drugs, I don't advise using drugs, but, you know, I have certain articles that can help them, you know, maybe decrease some of the side effects. It's not going to erase them. But, you know, it might help, like, for example, liver problems when you take orals. I have articles about that. But
okay.
Applied Metabolics is not really a drug newsletter. It's bodybuilding, fitness, and nutrition. And it contains stuff that you don't find in other places. I think anybody interested in those topics will get a lot of benefit from it. I really do believe that.
Yeah.
A lot of work into it. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, we look forward to having you on the show again, Jerry. Everybody loves when you're on here. So I always get a lot of emails and people love when you're on here.
With my big New York mouth, like somebody called me. I had a lawyer once, you know, during a trial. I wanted to say something. And he whispers to me, he says, keep your big New York mouth shut.
And I saw you on that other podcast, too. That was really good. So I'm glad other people are interviewing you, too, to get all your good stories, you know.
Yeah, I have a lot of stories. That's true. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Who's coming up, John? Do you have anyone planned to interview on the Legend Show?
No, I'm supposed to interview Charles Gaines about his partner, George Butler. So I'm trying to get that going.
Yeah, that would be good.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
But, you know, it really made me think when Marvin Eder died, I was like, God, I didn't even know he was still alive. So I got to reach out and try and find some of these old timers that are still around and do their stories, you know?
I'll tell you what, if I can ever get a hold of them, I'll refer them to us. They must have some fantastic stories.
Yeah, yeah.
Even going back to the 50s, if you know, those guys are, you know, they're scarce now.
Yeah.
If these guys are like Marvin Eder's age, you know, they're up there.
Yeah.
But, you know, they'd be great topics.
Like Len Sell, isn't Len Sell still around?
Len Sell, yeah, he's still alive.
And Walter O'Malley is still around?
Walter O'Malley is still around. I think he had some sort of health problem, but I think he's still around.
Yeah.
Those kind of guys. Yeah. Len Sell won. He won the NABBA Universe twice.
Yeah.
He's a good guy. I don't know the man personally, but he's definitely, one of the classic bodybuilders, you know?
Yeah. Did you ever have this series of books, Jerry?
Which one is that? Yes, I did. I bought them as soon as they became available.
Me too. I bought them too.
Anyone who's into history would buy those.
Yeah. I'm so glad I got those things, man. That's unbelievable.
Did Bill autograph it for you?
I don't think he did, no.
Yeah, I bought probably one of the first set, and he autographed it for me. I don't think he knew it was me because he knows me, you know what I mean? I don't think he
picked
it. But he just gave a general autograph, like thank you or something like that. He wrote, hope you enjoyed Bill Pro. But I recognize his signature. It really was his signature. But those are great. There's like three volumes. Those are great.
Three volumes are great, yeah.
And anybody who loves history of bodybuilding, I mean, he covers every – it's great. I mean, he put so much work into that stuff.
That's where I was reading about Marvin Eder.
Yeah, and the other great, if you're really into the history of that, is Randy Roach's
– Yeah, Muscle, Smoke, and Mirrors.
Muscle, Smoke, and Mirrors, all of them, all the volumes. I mean, he did a great one. The most recent one where he covered the 80 and 81 Mr. Olympia.
Yeah.
And he puts in all the controversies. I definitely highly recommend those books. I mean, you'll love it. If you love the history – he tells you stuff. I learned stuff I never knew.
And
great.
Yeah, he interviewed me for that about the 81.
Did he?
Yeah.
He interviewed me for the first volume of the Muscle, Smoke, and Mirror, where I talked about how I how I used to drink eight quarts of milk. I was a kid to bulk up.
Yeah.
I was drinking a ton of milk, and I put on like 50 pounds or something like that.
Yeah, that was the way they did it back then, right?
Yeah, it was in the book. Yeah. He's a good guy. I mean, amazing guy. Right? Guy's blind.
That's unbelievable.
Right? So, I mean, I have enough trouble writing with sight.
Me too. Me too.
this guy is writing. I mean, wow.
Yeah.
I said
those books are so detailed too.
I said, you're an amazing guy. I told him, he said, amazing. I mean, I strongly, anyone, again, you really want to know the history of bodybuilding, nutrition stuff, read Randy's books. They're great. I have more.
Yeah, me too. Me too. All right, Jared. Well, thanks again for joining me on all these shows where we went back 40 and 50 years. We do it every year, and I appreciate all the time you spend going over all these shows.
Right.
So we will have you again soon, hopefully. Maybe we'll bring some other guests back, and we'll talk about some other topics.
Sounds good, John. And keep up the great work, and stay healthy yourself.
All right. Thanks, Jared. I will.
Get off those drugs, for crying out. I'm just kidding.
Yeah. And try not to lift too heavy. I'm just doing myself.
Well, you'll know when it's too heavy. Believe me. Trust me, I'm older than you. I knew when it got too heavy. Believe me. Body will let you know.
Right.
All right. Take care.
All right, Jared. Take care of yourself.
Bye-bye.
All right. Thanks for listening to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. Thanks again to Jerry Branham for joining us. Jerry has spent so much time with us and these review shows that we do at the end of the year. So I really appreciate his time. I know he enjoys them too. So it's great to have him on the show. Everybody loves hearing Jerry's interviews. All right. I also want to thank our Patreon donors. You guys are really helping to support the show every week that we do an episode. So if you want to become a Patreon donor, if you're interested in that at all, just go to our official website, which is bodybuildinglegendshow.com, and you'll see in the upper right-hand corner the link for Patreon. All right, before I let you guys go, I want to read this article, which comes from the May 1983 issue of Muscle Training Illustrated. This was Dan Lowry's magazine, and I just got a bunch of these from my parents' crawl space around Christmas time when I was out there. So I was reading through this one, and it was really a good article, an interview with Lee Haney right after he won the 1982 Mr. Universe contest in Belgium. And this was conducted by Doris Berrio. Doris is also known as the, I think she was called the mother of women's bodybuilding or the grandmother of women's bodybuilding. She was one of the first people to ever put on a women's bodybuilding competition. And I got a chance to know Doris a few years ago because she lived out here in Florida, and she passed away a couple of years ago, unfortunately. But she really was a great contributor to the sport. She did a lot of interviews, did a lot of work for MTI magazine. She was also a photographer, took a lot of great pictures, did a lot of covers, and really contributed a lot to bodybuilding, especially with women's bodybuilding. So I hope people will remember her as time goes on, because she really was a real icon in the sport. All right, let me read this article. It says, the day following Lee Haney's triumph at the American Championships in New York City, for the whole American team left for Bruges, Belgium, to attend the World Championships. While I waited at Kennedy Airport, I had the opportunity to interview Lee, 1982 American champion, and now the 1982 World Champion. Here is Lee's story. I understand you had a year layoff and you've just been training for the past 11 months. Lee, that's right. When I started back, I weighed 200 pounds. In less than 3 months, I went from 200 to 236. I entered the Atlantic USA in February of 1982 at 216, cut, good, and hard. I was on a high-protein, high-carbohydrate diet with a two-day split, double split, which consists of training 6 days a week. I take in 200 grams of carbohydrates, which is very different, really unheard of according to the top bodybuilders, as most of them recommend low carbohydrates. When I entered the Atlantic USA, I was ripped to pieces. What kind of foods did you eat? I was taking in the type of carbohydrates that were listed in the 6 to 3% category, like melons, strawberries, some pineapple, oranges, juicy types, which pass right through your system and give you energy. No bananas or things such as that. It worked really well. I also took in high amounts of honey, while a lot feel that that will smooth you out. But honey being pre-digested gave me energy. I just ate it by the spoonful, even though some claim it will make you fat. I was ripped to the bone. For the Junior America, I didn't use honey, and I kept my carbohydrate level a little higher, but I had a little problem as far as water retention. It was due to the type of cycle I was on. When you say cycle, are you talking about drug cycle or food cycle or workout cycle or what? No, I'm talking about a drug cycle. It was a little different from the other one. Oh, you told me that you hadn't used drugs before. Well, this was the first year I've ever experimented with anything like that. The one I used for the Junior Mr. America was a little different. I'm very strong. I bench press over 500 pounds and I squat close to 600 pounds. Some people use high amounts of testosterone to get strong. All it causes is the body to retain water. I'm already strong, so why do I need it? When I was 19, I weighed 245. So as far as trying to acquire size, it's not necessary. How old are you now? I'm 22. For this show, I cut out the testosterone the last 4 weeks. It wasn't necessary. I stayed big anyway. Matter of fact, I had to get my body weight down. How tall are you? I'm 5'11", and I weighed in at this show, the American Championships, at 228. My body weight is now 231. I look better. Dehydration and because of lowering my carbs caused me to look drawn out at the show. I felt I could have looked better. But at the night show, the main show, I did look better because I upped my sugar level. I got in some honey and whole wheat. And for the World Championships, I'm going to look better because I'm weighing 232. What other foods besides the fruits do you eat? A lot of people feel as though eggs being high in cholesterol will cause you to get fat. A lot recommend eliminating eggs or just eating the whites. But why throw away the yellow? It's complete protein. It wasn't meant that way, just shoving egg whites in your stomach and throwing away the most important part. Eggs have choline in them. It has the capability of metabolizing its own fat. Some people's metabolism is slower, but mine is okay. I use eggs in salads and pre-digested protein the last 2 weeks before my show. For instance, 4 eggs 3 times a day and a good salad. I kept my carbs sort of low, but I felt I should have upped them the last 3 days. I've done so at this show, and I look better. The body will normally utilize that kind of fat more so than the fat that's taken in from red meats. That's why an egg is more beneficial. It can metabolize itself. By training twice a day, I was able to burn calories in the morning and again in the evening. And then after my last meal, I'd go back in the gym and do some aerobics. Is aerobics all you did for cutting up? Yes, that and bicycling. As far as the different types of cutting drugs they use, thyroxin and crap like that, no way. All it takes is a little extra aerobics and bicycling. If you build up an appetite, then something like popcorn at night would be great. You know, popcorn is fiber. It helps keep your body cleansed out. It's one of the best appetite suppressants in the world, especially when you're on a diet. I agree. I don't use salt or butter, and I just fill up on it at night often. Yeah, it feels better than going to bed hungry. I can't sleep if I'm hungry. I have to get up and eat something. Well, let's get back to your contest preparation. Well, as I said previously, during the latter part of preparation, I cut out the testosterone. I'm already strong, and I don't have any problem gaining size. I use more anabolics, though not in large quantities. I want to do it safely. I don't want to be like some of the other guys who go crazy with shooting and injecting. I'm patient. I train hard. I train seriously. And I feel I've been able to achieve a lot in such a short period of time. When did you first start training? I first started when I was 17. That's when I became a serious bodybuilder. I had received a leg injury. Ligaments and cartilage were torn playing football. And then in my senior year in high school, I received a break on my other leg. So all I could do was lay around in the weight room. Then at 19, I attended junior college and I got deeper into bodybuilding. During my first year in junior college, I won the Teenage Mr. America in 1979. I've been training seriously now for 4 years because I took a layoff last year. I had to have surgery and I was getting up my own fitness center in South Carolina. It's called the Olympian Fitness Center. It's a co-ed center and it's doing great. Miss South Carolina Sharon Bierschick trains there. Tell me more about your training. Well, in the morning, I train from 8 to 9:30, and then again in the afternoon from 6:30 to 8. I train a double split. The type of program I use this time is a 3-on-1-off. You train 3 days straight, and then you take a day off. I break up the body parts. I train chest in the morning, shoulders in the afternoon. The next day, I might train only legs, and the following day is arms and back. The next day, I give all my body parts a rest. I compensate for the calorie buildup by doing some aerobics for that day so that I don't get fat. I don't take in as much food on that day off as I normally would. So each body part gets 4 days to recuperate. When you train real heavy, you have a tendency to have problems with your joints and ligaments. But at this routine, you can go heavy with less strain on your joints. It's been a very efficient program because I've gained over 30 pounds of hard muscle in just 11 months. Do you know what your measurements are? I did receive a college scholarship, even though I broke my leg in my senior year. I played for about 3 weeks, but I was experiencing trouble in the left side of my ankle. I had my tibia and fibula broken and torn ligaments. I had x-rays done in college, and I was told I still had floating bone splints and my ligaments had not fully healed. So I decided to give up football rather than risk getting permanently damaged. What do you do for a living? I have my degree in youth counseling, and I'm certified to be a juvenile officer. But at this time, I'm co-owner of two fitness centers in South Carolina and North Carolina, and they're doing very well. The economy is bad, but if people have money left over, they're taking care of their bodies with it. Well, it's cheaper to join a gym than visit a doctor. What are your ultimate goals? I'd like to win the Olympia next year. I hope to be super, and I want to be bigger and better than Sergio Oliva. I'm wondering if you had any idols. Arnold is another. It was both Arnold and Sergio that inspired me. Arnold was a polished, graceful look, and Sergio's massive. I'm 22, and I tipped the scales at 230, so I feel that with another year or two of hard training and more knowledge, I'll be able to achieve my goals. When my normal weight is 260, I'm still not fat. At the International Congress, I know some of the countries are going to start to ask that they start doing drug testing. How do you feel about testing for drugs? Well, when I won the Teenage Mr. America, I was not on them. A lot of guys asked if I was going to take them, and I said, I don't need them. But when I went to the Mr. USA, I was in super shape. I weighed in at 218 pounds, and at 20, I was the youngest guy in the show. But I looked at everybody's skin texture compared to mine. If you're going to compete, it's just one of the prices you have to pay. Well, what if they make rules against them? Would you be for or against having rules? Well, I think it's up to the competitor. But you don't think they should have rules even though it forces you to do it just because everyone else does it? Does it bother you that you have to do it because they do? I truly wish that would have stayed the way it was. That's the way I would have wanted it, all natural. When I took my first shot, it was like a part of me died. It really made me sick. I do have an advantage by having good genetics. My father has good calves, a big round chest, good arms, and a big wide back. It played a major part in the way I've been able to achieve my physical appearance. I was interviewing Corey Everson, who won the North American Championships, and she commented on her genetics. She said, thank you, God, for giving me my mother and father. She knew her heredity played a major part in her athletic physique. It makes a big difference. It's all through my family. Even my grandfather was the same way. I actually wish bodybuilding would have remained the way it was. You know, in the women's contest, we started giving tests at the American Championships. Some women are starting to use them, too. We're trying to stop it before it gets started. It's even worse for women to use the male drugs. Physiques like yours and Lisa Lyon, Rachel McLish, Shelley Gruwall, these are beautiful physiques. I read an article you had written about the turn of female bodybuilding. And then Lee says, physiques like yours, Lisa Lyon, Rachel McLish, Shelley Gruwall, those are beautiful physiques. I read an article you had written about the turn of female bodybuilding, how long people like you have strived to get females to come out of their closet and start taking care of their bodies. And then all of a sudden there are some freaks on the scene and all of a sudden women are back in the closet. I have the hardest time in my fitness centers trying to convince the ladies that they're not going to look like me. The first thing I do is show them a picture of you. You're a great help to a lot of ladies when they see your picture. And then it says, note, on the flight back from Belgium, I wanted to continue the interview and get Lee's feelings on the world championships, but I never had the opportunity. When I asked him how he felt about winning the contest, his simple reply was, I knew it all along. Wow, great article. Really a great insight into a young Lee Haney. And I think it's amazing after me and Jerry just had that long talk about drugs and bodybuilding and about how it's really changed the sport for the worse. It's interesting to hear Lee Haney, eight-time Mr. Olympia, say that he wishes bodybuilding was just all natural and that it had stayed the way it was. And of course, he had to do what he had to do to compete. But I thought that was really a great quote when he said it made him sick when he did his first shot. It was really wild. So Lee obviously did it right. He did not use drugs that much, and he's still healthy now in his 60s and got out of the sport, as I said, at the right time and really did just a perfect career. I mean, when you look at Lee Haney's career, all the wins he had and how he managed his career and how he conducted himself as a bodybuilder and a gentleman. And he's really the exemplar bodybuilder throughout the history of bodybuilding, more than anybody, I think. And that was also interesting that Doris brought up Corey Everson, who had not yet won the Miss Olympia. Of course, she won the Miss Olympia in 1984, and this was only in 1982. I think Corey had not even turned pro yet. I think she did that in 1984. So, but she did bring up Corey with the great genetics, and then course, Corey went on to win the Miss Olympia 6 times and Lee won it 8 times. So they just dominated bodybuilding in the 80s, Lee and Corey Everson. So that was a very, very interesting article by Doris Berrio. All right, guys, hope you enjoyed that. And we will see you guys next week for another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. Take care of yourself. Train hard. Don't get hurt like me. And we'll see you guys next week. Take care.